Doctor shook his head. He was sympathetic but firm. "It's no use, Johnny," he said. "There's no place in the army for a fellow who stutters as badly as you do." There it was again. It began to look as if I wasn't even worth killing. The postmaster, who happened to be the recruiting officer in our little Missouri town, had known me all my life. He hadn't even given me a chance to get off the speech I'd carefully rehearsed. I gulped down the lump in my throat. Everybody around me was going crazy about the war. I was underage, 18, but with as bad a case of war fever as the next fellow. Worse, probably. Because when America went into the war, I'd made up my mind that for once I was going to do the same thing everybody else was doing. Ever since I'd learned to talk, or tried to learn, my stuttering had made a barrier between me and other people. It hit me harder, too, because that morning word had come that one of our neighbor boys had enlisted, and I'd heard my father say he guessed the Barclays were petering out. From Revolutionary days on, whenever America got into trouble, there'd always been a Barclay in the fight. I might have expected just what had happened. During the border troubles with Mexico, I'd tried to get by a hard-boiled regular army sergeant who was recruiting in Warrensburg. He turned me down cold because of that damned stuttering. But Holden was my hometown, and the recruiting agent wasn't hard-boiled. I thought his having known me all my life might make a difference. Also, I hoped having been away to school would give me a chance to make him think my stuttering had improved. That was why I'd practiced up the speech. And he hadn't even let me use it. It seemed to me I was up against a stone wall, and I got stubborn about it. My brother Doc and I both registered for the draft, but it was just a formality. He had never entirely recovered from a serious operation. We knew he'd be thrown out on the physical examination. And with two experiences to go by, it was easy to see what would happen to me. Just the same, I wasn't going to give up until there was nothing else to do. The draft board would be strangers, not old friends like the postmaster and not hard-boiled sergeants. I might be able to bluff them. And slim as the chance was, still I had a better chance than my brother. So when the summons came for him, I kept after my father until I got him to use his influence and have my name substituted for Doc's. I was pretty nervous when my turn before the draft board came. It started off all right. Physical examination, perfect. Eyesight and hearing, unusually good. But all the time they kept asking me questions that had to be answered. They got me rattled. After a while, the words wouldn't even start to come out. It was plain from the doctor's faces what they were thinking. Still, I got up nerve enough to ask one of them, who looked sympathetic, if he'd thought I'd pass. "Hell no," he said. "They'll never let you get anywhere." But he got up and went into the next room, and I could hear him talking to another doctor in there. That was what saved me. "God damn it," the second doctor roared. "We're not picking orators, we're picking fighting men." But even after my notice came to report at Camp Funston, I still thought that when I got there and they heard me talk, they'd probably decide it had been a mistake and send me home again. I didn't have many goodbyes to say. There were my dogs and my old horse, Charlie, and my family and a girl. She was the first one I'd known who didn't laugh at my stuttering, and she seemed pretty wonderful to me. I hadn't any close friends. It's so much easier to go out to the woods with a gun and a couple of dogs than to try to make friends with people, at the risk of making a fool of yourself instead every time you open your mouth. I'd spent more days alone in the woods than I ever had at school, and a good many nights. Out there, it was easy to forget that everybody laughed at me when I tried to talk. Just before leaving for camp, I got really engaged to my girl, with a ring and everything. My family thought she was fine, and I certainly felt grown up and excited about it. It was the most important thing that had ever happened to me, except getting in the army. It was the middle of September when we left for Camp Funston, and it was a mixed-up crowd we found on the troop train. There were several free-for-all fights before we got shaken down. I didn't mind those. I was used to fighting. I can't remember when I found out that there's only one way to make a boy stop laughing at you. That's to fight him. And since I'd always been undersized, I'd had to learn how to move quick and think fast to keep from being beaten. I saw now that it had been darn good training. Also, that I was going to have plenty of use for it long before we got to France. It was at the end of one of those fights on the train that I met Tom O'Leary. I never got a word out of Tom about what he was doing out there in Kansas. He was 4 or 5 years older than I, and he came from Chicago. That's all he ever told me.